This is the TSN MMA show with Aaron Bronstetter and Bazooka Joe Valtellini.
The UFC goes to Sydney, Australia, and I think that the card might still be going on. A new meaning for the term decisions, decisions, decisions. Fabricio Werdum, while in Australia, throws a boomerang at Colby Covington. Even a pro wrestling creative team could do better than that. Volkan Oezdemir gets arrested. Will he still get a shot at Daniel Cormier for the title? The UFC books Cyborg and Holm for UFC 219, but it might not be the main event because they're trying to put together a welterweight title fight between Tyron Woodley and Nate Diaz? We'll talk about that. And we're joined by the newest Canadian on the UFC roster, undefeated Mean Hakeem Dawood, who joins us to talk about signing with the organization as one of the best featherweight prospects in the world. We'll hear what's next for him, when he expects to fight in the UFC. So, Joe, that Sydney card was long. Very, very long.
Decisions and decisions and more decisions. Split decision here. It was long.
I was watching at my desk because I come in to work on fight nights. And that co-main event, I was like slapping myself to stay awake.
Yeah, oh yeah, it was bad.
It's tough. I mean, you know, when you have young kids and you're up early in the morning with them, it's hard to stay up till 1 a.m. or past 1 a.m. for a card like this. I know that if I wasn't at work covering it, I would have been falling asleep.
And even as now that I do the broadcasting with Glory, I realize how the backstage works. And you got to think that producer was probably freaking out backstage. You're given so much time, and if you're going over that time, it was tough. Even I was watching it on TSN, and I PVR'd it because I did fall asleep. And I went to go watch the PVR, and that last main event didn't make it, so I only got to really see the last, I think it was two rounds. I didn't even get to see 3, 4, 5,
That's
so I had read about
move,
it.
Joe. Rookie, you always have to tape
I always
what's
have
after.
To tape. You would think it's 2017. Come on, people. You know if you're watching a live event, they should automatically record that
I agree
for
with you.
You.
I just don't.
It should be automatic.
Yeah, there should be like a designation for live events.
For sure. If it's going on, you should absolutely have the option to continue to play. So
we work here at Bell, so I can maybe send a note to
I would
the superiors.
Think so.
I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, or put me in their office. Let me speak to them.
Yeah, let's go.
Yeah. Let's barge in there.
Yeah, exactly.
Tell them what's up,
Aaron.
We have
to discuss something.
That's it. Why not? I'm actually pissed, but I read about it. I heard the rounds were the same anyway, so I didn't miss too much.
I think it's on Fight Pass also. Like, if you miss it, you can go back and watch Fight Pass right away in Canada. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I had enough of that card. I think I'm good.
You're good.
I think I'm good. I watched enough of it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when you see a 50-45, 49-46, you know that it was
exactly
a fairly dominant fight. And I thought that Werdum, you know, was rightfully favored as he was against Tybura. Tybura is a good fighter. He showed a lot of poise in that fight. Wasn't giving up, you know, like kept going. It looked like he was trying to be really patient so he could land good shots. And he landed some really nice head kicks in the fight that kind of wobbled Werdum, but
Werdum, that's all he really had was that high kick.
Yeah.
I think Werdum's basics just looked really good. He trains with Rafael Cordeiro, which is one of the best, stand-up striking coaches in MMA, Brazilian. So you saw that solid basics in Werdum. Good jabs, solid low kicks, good body kicks. Like, overall, he just had a very good sense of distance control, and that's where his experience really came out. I mean, Tybura's high kicks a few times caught him, but Tybura didn't really have, I don't think, the power to really do it. But for me, it's Tybura was just another example of those fights where he was an underdog and everyone tried hyping him up, gave him a lot of credit. But Werdum's just on another level, and I'm sure we'll see him title shot soon again.
Yeah, I think Werdum, if he can get another win over maybe a Volkov, or I don't think he's going to get a shot at the winner of Overeem and Ngannou. I think the winner of that fight's getting the next title shot. Although there are rumors that Stipe might be coming back sooner rather than later, and one name I had heard was Volkov, that Volkov might get the next title shot, which I think would be very strange when you've got a guy like Ngannou,
exactly,
you know, waiting in the wings. I mean, if Ngannou lost, then they gave him the shot, and we'll know in 2 weeks whether or not he does win or lose against Overeem. If Overeem ends up winning, maybe you do give Volkov the shot.
Yeah,
try to build the young guy.
Regardless, Verdum's still looking good at his age. It's still impressive.
I mean,
I think to beat him, you need someone who's a little bit more unorthodox, a little bit more aggressive. You can't really sit in front of him like Tybura did and try to get a win. You got to give it to him. Like we saw Stipe do, you just got to go after him. Don't let him set in and get comfortable and let him establish his range and his basics. You got to go at him. Tybura should have been a little bit more aggressive with him.
Yeah, and I think that Werdum kind of learned not to get too crazy with his strike.
Oh, yeah, relaxed.
Yeah,
that's where he messed up.
Yeah, that's what happened with Stipe. He just was far too aggressive, although I'd say that Stipe's a far better striker than Tybura. More power.
Oh, absolutely.
Better technical striker.
Oh, all around.
Yeah.
More.
And I think that showed.
It's that explosive striking that Stipe has that most guys don't. If he hits you, he'll put you out, where Tybura probably needs a few shots to kind of sting you and put you out. But, yeah, Stipe's going to man, he's on his way to be pound for pound. He's on a good roll for me.
Yeah, for sure. You know, one thing I want to pick your brain about is four fighters missed weight and all four of them won. So do you think that's an anomaly, or do you think that guys or girls in this case as well have an advantage when they don't make weight, if they get to be a little bit heavier than their opponent?
Well, I think it depends on the weight cut itself. A lot of fighters who miss weight, you'll look and maybe they didn't put that extra little energy to get that weight down. But if you're a fighter who killed yourself and you still couldn't make weight, it's actually a disadvantage for you when you think about it. They're putting in that extra strain on your body trying to make weight. It could be worse for you. You got to remember, that 2-3 pounds advantage a lot of times doesn't come into play. If you're getting that 2-3 pound weight advantage and that's having to come from sitting in the sauna an extra 24 hours out, which means, you know, less fluid in your brain, which means, you know, a punch that might, you know, you might be able to take in training, that shot's knocking you out in the fight. So not necessarily does that have an advantage, but I guess in this case it did. But, I mean, the only thing that happens is you lose a percentage of your purse. Right. I don't know what the UFC's...
And a bonus. I mean...
Oh, yeah, Camacho, we lost... Yeah, he lost 50,000.
Yeah.
Plus 20% of his purse. So that's where it really sucks. But that's where you have to be a professional. I don't believe in guys not making weight. I think it's part of your job to do it. And we've been in this game long enough. It is probably the hardest part of your training camp is making sure you're on weight. And you know this. The only time it's an excuse is if you take a short notice fight. But if you know you can't make that weight in that short notice fight, do not take the fight. You know, right. It's part of your job. It's part of your professionalism. Make weight.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I think it could just be an anomaly. I mean, three of the four fighters that did win were favored.
Yeah.
To win. So, you know, there's also different fighters that are different at different talent levels.
Yeah, fighters are very psychological beings. I mean, even if you're fighting someone and just to think you have 1 or 2 pounds advantage, it's people take that so literally and they feel so much more confident over it. I mean, even when we're booking fights, a lot of fighters won't, you know, if we're trying to make a catch weight, they won't even step in on a fight. Oh, you know, it might be 2 pounds out of my weight class. A lot of fighters won't even take 2 pounds thinking that 2 pounds is a big advantage. We forget about how important technique is a lot of the time. It doesn't matter. With good technique, me as a welterweight, I'll go fight a heavyweight. If, as long as I have good technique, good footwork, good speed, good distance control, 2 pounds shouldn't make a difference. So I think people get too caught up on those 1 or 2 pound differences.
Any particular fighters stand out to you?
That don't make weight?
No, just in this particular card. That just forget weight.
I was going to say weight. Yeah. I was like, let's talk about Thiago Alves here, who's constantly missing, or Johnny Hendricks. But
no, I'm talking about in this particular card. Is there anybody whose performance stood out to you?
Well, obviously, I have to go with Tuivasa. The way I'm a low kicker, it's no surprise to that. But, man, that big leg kick, you know, almost dropped Coulter. But that flying knee, there was the second heavyweight to ever land a flying knee KO, which was pretty cool, they said on broadcast. The kid's good, man. I think Tuivasa is very talented, and I loved his striking. I love solid low kicks and the way he mixed up that left knee, one of my favorite techniques. Once you throw a lot of right kicks, people block that side. Step off, throw that left knee, whether it's flying or a step knee to the body. I think it's just a good setup overall, and I want to see him again. I think he adds to a good list of heavyweight strikers.
He's the brother-in-law of Tyson Pedro, who was actually sitting front row for the card. They said he was the first Aboriginal to win a UFC fight, but Cajun Johnson's an Aboriginal Canadian, and I know he won. He won his fight, or he's won three in a row, rather. So I just don't know if they mean Aboriginal Australian, if it's a different designation.
Yeah, what
but they
does
said
it
that
mean?
On the broadcast. Yeah, so I mean,
they kept
way,
repeating it. Not only did they say that, they seem to keep repeating it throughout the night.
Right. So I don't know. I would need clarification on that because I personally I'm not as familiar with what, you know, I guess an Aboriginal Canadian and Aboriginal Australian might be two different things,
so,
but I don't know. I don't really want to comment on it because I'm not 100% educated on the subject, and that's probably to my own detriment, and I should look into that. Tai Tuivasa looked very good in his debut in the UFC. He's been trying to make the debut for a year, so he was very excited. His post-fight interview was good, too. So this is a guy who...
Yeah, he knows how to do it.
It's always a breath of fresh air when you see guys like that are under the age of 28 in the heavyweight division do good things because you know that that's probably going to be the future. It's just because there are just not that many young guys in the heavyweight division.
Yeah, no, I agree. I like it when you have someone that with confidence and personality like that. We had a good Samoan kid come to glory, same type of personality, same type of positivity and confidence. So, yeah, I think there's the Australia, New Zealanders are coming out.
Another performance that I thought was interesting was Nadia Qassem. She made her debut. She did miss weight, but I thought she was a fun fighter to watch. I don't know how technically skilled she is overall, but looked like a lot of fun in her win over Alex Chambers. Looked like she was doing a lot of creative things in there, throwing up interesting submissions, interesting striking, good footwork. Only 21 and lots of room to grow. So I think that it'll be interesting to see how she moves along in the strawweight division or the flyweight division. She did say after the fight that she had trouble missing weight. She might be interested in moving up a weight class, which is, you know, which is good. A lot of people are really hesitant to move up a weight class.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think it's the right move. Like, I mean, Kelvin Gastelum will be discussing later on in the card. While he might not be able to get to that top echelon of middleweights, he's looked good at middleweight.
Yeah.
You know, he's not worried about cutting the weight. He's quite small for middleweight. But, you know, it was really difficult for him to cut to 170 pounds, and he realized that, I guess the UFC realized that and moved him up.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of fighters that way, and some people don't respond well to cutting weight. So if I like guys who, old-school martial artists, who know that they believe in themselves, they don't care about that extra little bit of weight. They'd rather go in with 100% energy. Why go in depleted? Have a full camp, a lot of full energy. So I see where the benefit in that is. Maybe when I first started and when all weight cutting was such a big, everyone was doing it. But I think now in this age, he's doing it right. I mean, you can have an advantage, but if it's going to take away the quality of your life, if you're going to stop enjoying what you do because now you're depleting yourself and you're going to be more angry, you're going to have less time with your family because you're cranky all the time, maybe it works better with his life. Maybe he's one of those hangry people who just gets super angry when he's hungry and he doesn't focus well. So if it works for him, keep going.
He says he likes to eat.
We all do. Yeah. So let him enjoy it.
Yeah. I guess that's a decision you have to make, right?
Yeah.
But you have to prioritize.
Now, I know a few fighters like that who just, they'd rather eat. Why not?
Yeah. Well, look at Gokhan Saki back when he fought at heavyweight.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He was
like
definitely the same thing.
215 pounds.
Yeah. I mean, he's just a martial artist. He's confident. He'll fight anyone, anytime. So if you have that mentality, sure, go for it.
One person I want to discuss, obviously, is Elias Theodoru, the only Canadian on the card. I thought he looked fantastic. I mean, the amount of output that he got in three rounds was, I mean, from my research, it looked like he tied the record with Michael Bisping for the most strikes landed in a three-round middleweight fight. I'd have to go back through every middleweight fight,
but I looked at
the leaders for strike differential and strikes per minute and stuff like that, and I couldn't find anybody that had hit that 118 other than Michael Bisping.
Well, I would think in kicks especially. I don't think he really even threw any punches.
Yeah.
And I mean, when he did throw punches, they were more in that close range, and it scared me a little bit at times when he was getting in those punch ranges, but his kicks on the outside were just that dominant. He didn't stop. Low kick, body kick, high kick. And what he does, he has this exit kick that he keeps throwing. Like, it's this exit snap kick that just kept landing. Like, I mean, very high kick output, and I appreciate that. I really like that. I like guys who can use their kicking as a way of strategy. I mean, you don't see that very much, even in kickboxing these days. Guys really focus too much on boxing, where Elias is a little bit more of my mentality, where he's like, you know what? The kicks are stronger weapons. They're longer. I can hit you from further out, and he used really good movement and kicks, and I can see, I think he's working with Crew Ash and with his Muay Thai, and now he's working with TriStar. So I think whatever they're doing, he looked better. And I think one of the biggest things that he looked better with his kicking, if you watched his last fights, his kick distance was a little bit off. And you've seen the guys, he just kept missing a lot of kicks. Where this fight, he was connecting a lot better. He seemed to be doing more damage with it, landing more successfully. So like Elias said in his post-fight, he's still so new. He's still continually getting better. And I think we saw that this fight here against a tough guy. And his takedown defense, you know, you got to think a few throws that Elias was good to counterbalance takedown defense. So I like the way he's improving and the way he's really utilized his kicks to steal that win.
We're talking about a judo Olympian, so it's no joke. I mean, him staying on his feet was a big part of that win.
Yeah.
And don't let the good looks fool you with Elias. He's very intelligent, very, very smart guy, and knows how to strategize against his different opponents. And his strategy was pretty clear. Out volume, out pace, stop takedowns. Use the kicks as a weapon. He really bruised up the ribs of Dan Kelly. I did see a lot of people on Twitter give Dan Kelly all three rounds, so I was wondering if you thought that Elias.
But you know what it was for
rounds?
Me? What I found, and I wrote a note here. I just don't think the commentary was overly fair to Elias. I felt, especially Dan Hardy, they kept talking about Kelly doing things. Dan Kelly this, Dan Kelly's judo is this, Dan Kelly that, but they never really overhyped up Elias. So I think based on the commentary, a lot of people gave Kelly an advantage, but I thought it was a solid all three. I mean, the second round, Elias almost got caught in that rear naked choke, which he survived near the end. But before that, he was doing well. He was still dominating the round. I mean, I don't think there's any way Dan Kelly won three rounds. Yeah, I don't even think he maybe won one, if that.
I had all three for Elias.
Yeah, if you want to give him the one where he almost had the rear naked because it was the closest to the finish that we saw, but no, it's definitely a dominant for Elias.
Well, the 30-26 kind of confuses me. I didn't see a 10-8 round in there, but
yeah,
I mean, I thought the right guy won, so I don't want to get too critical of that scorecard because, you know, not like it was 30-27 Kelly, which I think, again, I saw a lot of people online score it that way.
No, I can't see that.
So, kudos to Elias on a really good win there. Bilal Muhammad against Tim Means I thought was a very good fight. I thought Bilal had it. A lot of people thought Means won, but I thought Bilal was just landing the crisper shots. He was landing better shots, and people were talking about Means' volume, but it was pretty close. Like, every round was pretty close in terms of
volume. It was close to me. It was definitely really close. I think it was the second round. I think people were... it really came down to the takedown attempts and the defense, but I don't know. To me, I don't know. I wanted Means to win because that was my pick, obviously, on our bet picks that we'll talk about in a bit. But yeah, overall, it was a good fight. I mean, Means is very tall and awkward, so Bilal did a good job at doing what he had to do.
Yeah, let's talk about our picks now. We may as well before we continue on. Oh, actually, before we get to that, I did want to mention one thing. Will Brooks, I think, has lost now three in a row. After signing from Bellator, he was the champion, and Bellator came to the UFC, and he's been very disappointing. So, you know, it's tough to see him get another loss. He's a nice guy. I like Will, but you know, Nick Lentz gets it done, and then gets on the mic and says he'll beat anybody that fights at ATT.
At ATT, and then he also said, "I'm a professional. I'd beat my own mama if I had to."
Yeah,
I was like, "Yeah, okay, he's
all
really
right, buddy.
Serious."
Yeah,
I'd let my mom win 100 out of 100 times.
And then people were saying like, "Oh, well, let's get Dustin Poirier in there and see how you do."
Yeah,
but it's tough to see Brooks get another loss in the UFC because he could. I mean, the amount of money that they're paying him, that they had to sign him to pay him, they might just cut bait with him.
Yeah, who knows?
You know, his fights aren't the most exciting fights. He's not performing. He's lost three in a row. So, and I don't think Bellator would take him back because he ended his Bellator stint on bad terms.
Yeah. So. Bellator seems like they're moving on with their heavyweight tournaments. And
yeah, they're going to crown a new champion in 13 months from now. Very exciting. They haven't had a champion at heavyweight for like 2 years.
I also thought it was funny. You saw that last 30 seconds between Damian Brown and Camacho?
Yeah.
I felt even Dan Hardy was overhyping that, too. Did you hear him? He was just overly, what a war. And then he came in. It was probably one of the most awkward post-fight interviews I've seen in a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, Camacho was, like, probably still concussed, had no idea. At one point, he just didn't even know what Dan Hardy was saying and just started cheering, and it was just so awkward. And then he even went over to Brown and talked to him. I just thought it was an awkward overall, overhyped. It was a great 30 seconds.
It was the best fight on the card.
Yeah, it was a great 30 seconds, but I mean, to overhype that, to get in there, and I don't know, I just thought it was overhyped.
Yeah, well, it wasn't one like the best, it probably wasn't even in the conversation for fight of the year, but it was the fight of the night.
Yeah.
Clearly the fight of the night, but at the time, you wouldn't have known that. It was the first card on the prelims.
Yeah, and I just thought it was overhyped.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens with Will Brooks from here. I should also note that, you know, we've discussed the ranking system. Two guys that do the rankings for the UFC had Will Brooks ranked ahead of Ally Aquinta, James Vick, who else was there? Merbek Taisimov. Just like, why?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
Like, the ranking system needs to change.
Yeah.
And I've decided I'm not gonna sign up to do rankings. Instead, I'm just gonna criticize them.
I'm just gonna pick them apart.
I'm gonna find little things that need to be changed. Let's get some accountability going.
Does TSN have their own rankings?
No, we don't.
No, I think it's better that way. I remember
it. Listen, this is the thing with it is, are doing the rankings more important to me than my relationships with certain fighters? And probably not. Like, I don't want a fighter to turn down an interview, but because I have them ranked below somebody.
Yeah.
You know, because these are transparent. And that's why I think that secret ballot would be better for this, too, because people that are voting on these things have a vested interest in certain fighters. Like, if you're from Hawaii, one of the guys is from Hawaii, you'll want to maybe rank Yancy Medeiros above somebody because he's your friend. Because you cover the sport and you talk to him a lot. And he's a nice guy. He gets a good win. It's like, okay, Yancy's in the top 15 now. It's like, well, no, he's not.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Something's got to change.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I agree, though. I don't like having to, especially being now in this side of the mic. It's tough, and I hate doing it, and I always say it again. One of the toughest jobs of being a commentator is having to give an honest, sometimes your honest opinion.
And Daniel Cormier said that.
And
like
a lot of people
anymore.
Don't want it. Yeah, a lot of and I hate it because I'm a color commentator. For those who don't know, there's two commentators. So you have your play-by-play, which is your John Anik now, which was your Goldberg. And then you have your color commentator, which is Joe Rogan, DC, what I do. And the play-by-play always asks the color guy, give your predictions. And we hate it every single time because we're ex-athletes. We're in it. We know these guys. And every time I'd be asked them, I'm always trying to give this politically correct answer of who do I think, because they're both my friends. I give them both even chances. I know how it is to be in that position. And the last thing I want to do publicly on air is to say my friend is not good or is not doing well and I think he should do this or that. It's not up to me to make those decisions. Yeah. But what fighters need to understand, if you lose the decision, it has nothing to do with me. I'm not a judge. I don't know. I just gave my opinion. So fighters still get mad. They lose the fight.
Yeah,
and I said they lost.
Yeah.
And I was, oh, you thought I lost. But you did lose. And 3 to 5 other judges said you lost too. Why is it my fault? So, I mean, it still bothers me a lot. It's a touchy subject for me. You're getting me all heated up here, Aaron. Yeah. You're getting me all fired up. It's too early.
You know, Ariel Helwani says the same thing. I don't make predictions because he doesn't want people to not appear on his show. And
absolutely.
That's fine. You should be transparent about that.
Agree.
I am transparent about that. I'll say I don't want to do the rankings because I don't want people that I know, the fighters that I know, to hold it against.
Yeah, but fighters also need to stop being so sensitive. If you're ranked 4 instead of 5, if you're ranked 5 instead, who cares?
Okay, but
win your fights.
If you're a fighter and you see that Will Brooks is ranked ahead of you by 2 different people that are doing official rankings for the UFC,
but then you just laugh.
Annoying.
Now you're laughing though. Now you're giggling.
Annoying.
You're looking and you're giggling.
Yeah,
and
but it's tough for you to get into the rankings when they keep ranking the same guys in the top 15, even though they're losing consistently.
Win dominantly.
Yeah, like there are guys that have lost 4 or 5 that are still in the rankings.
There's never, like we said last show, there's never a question who the top 3 to 5 are. Get there, win, knock people out, do it decisively, take bigger fights, do bigger names. If you're winning and you're beating a top name.
But you can't, though. This is James Vick's argument, and I spoke to James Vick about this. So look at Michael Johnson. Michael Johnson's lost 4 or 5, and he's ranked, I think, 9th or 10th or something in the division because he's lost to tough-ranked opponents.
Yeah.
But the reason he's lost to tough-ranked opponents is that tough-ranked opponents will
better.
Fight him. No, they'll fight him because he's ranked.
Yeah.
Because if you say, oh, we can give you Michael Johnson, he's ranked 9th, or James Vick, he's not ranked, and they say, okay, well, Michael Johnson's lost 4 or 5, I can maybe he's a better matchup for me than James Vick, plus he's ranked, and it'll help me get ranked higher if I beat him.
Yeah, no, I get what you're saying.
Yeah, so that's James Vick's gripe. And I think it's a completely fair gripe. How is he going to get ranked when ranked guys won't fight him because he's not ranked?
Because he's not ranked yet. I guess, I mean, the ranking still takes a big, it plays a big role in matchups, but it shouldn't.
It really does, though.
It shouldn't.
And that's why there needs to be a better system in place.
Well, that's why you have the Colby Covingtons now having to use his words to get those big
and
fights.
Covington got the big fight with Maya, and now he's top 3 in the division.
Yeah.
So good for him.
Yeah, I mean, you got to start talking. You got to start talking now. I mean, it's part of the game now, it seems. If the rankings aren't going to do it with skill, you got to do it with your mouth.
Yeah, and one guy who has been able to do it or is starting to do it with his mouth because he's just starting off in the UFC is Hakeem Dawodu. He's an undefeated Canadian. According to the Flow Combat rankings, he's the #2 North American prospect at featherweight. He's now signed with the UFC, so he won't be part of those prospect rankings anymore because it's unsigned prospects. So we did have a chance to speak to Hakeem Dawodu, and he joins us now on the TSN MMA show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to introduce this week's guest.
Joining us now on the TSN MMA show, he is undefeated, and he's the newest Canadian on the UFC roster, Amin Hakeem Dawodu, considered one of the best prospects at featherweight, now a member of the UFC roster. How does that feel, Hakeem?
You know, it feels good. You know, it feels like it's been a long time coming, and, you know, I'm just very excited to finally represent and put the city back on the map.
You know, it was first reported by James Lynch that you had signed with the organization. He had you ranked #2 among North American prospects at featherweight, behind Andre Harrison, who has a really good resume, and who you were in the World Series of Fighting with. Do you think that's a fair representation of your skills?
You know, no. I think I'm #1. You know what I mean? The only reason why I didn't fight for the belt, you know, with Andre Harrison and WSOF is because I didn't want to re-signed for another year, you know what I mean? But I feel like I'm the #1. If I would have fought that guy, I would have put him away and knocked him out. He's too slow.
Is that how that works? If you become the champion there, you're locked in for a year? Is it, if you become under a championship contract?
yeah, you know, you win the championship, you know, you got to re-sign for another year. You represent that company, you know what I mean? You got to renegotiate your contract, and, you know, the pay will be better and all that, but you're still locked in for another year. And, you know, my goal was I really wanted to get in the UFC, so I was more concerned about getting out of my contract and starting up another one.
That's a savvy move on your part. I mean, you're brimming with confidence. I've seen it on social media and obviously just from speaking to you now. So here's a question that I've been wanting to ask you. And this is going to be, you know, come a little bit out of left field. But we've got an event in Winnipeg. Jose Aldo has left to go and fight for the title. Would you be willing to step up and fight Ricardo Lamas?
Of course. I'd be willing to fight Ricardo Lamas. No problem. If they want to put me on, then put me on. You know, that's a big fight. You know, that put me in the top 10, you know, my first fight, and then I'd be in the scene already. So I have no problem if I had to put that guy away.
I mean, it's in Canada. It's on Fox. That would be a good opportunity.
I mean, so they can call my manager and you know, make it happen.
All right. Yeah, let's make it happen. Let's lobby for this. Let's go. Let's get this going. We're in Winnipeg. It makes all the sense in the world. It's the only card right now that's scheduled for Canada. There's a nice opening at featherweight. Let's make it happen.
I mean, so, you know, my management, Chuck, they said be ready for, you know, February, January. But like I said, I've been training for a year straight. So I'm always willing to take a fight short notice. I'm always in good shape. I always stay close to weight. You know what I mean?
What makes your signing interesting to me, and obviously I've been representing Canadian kickboxing and Muay Thai for some time, but you're one of the few Canadian kickboxers and Muay Thai fighters to make it to the UFC. I mean, we've had guys like Shane Campbell, Alex Ricci, but you seem to be one of the highest kickboxing prospects in recent times to be signed to the UFC. Do you feel like you're representing more now of kickboxing, or are you still now completely into MMA?
I have a definitely a very kickboxing oriented style, but I'm a full MMA fighter now, man. I train jiu-jitsu, I train wrestling, you know. I got it all now, you know. I prefer to knock people out, but I represent MMA. I'm a full MMA fighter, but you know, for the Muay Thai community that knows me, you know, I had a deep amateur career and as well as a very deep pro career. I represent, you know, all the kickboxers out there. They love watching me fight as well. So, you know, I'm representing Muay Thai, but I am an MMA fighter.
What has been the biggest challenge? You know, one of my reasons I never went into MMA is because I found it difficult because I knew everyone was going to try to take me down. Do you find that? Are you finding it fun still? And what's been the biggest challenge?
At first, that was the biggest challenge because, you know, everybody did want to take me down. You know, everyone's shooting takedowns. It's a different energy system. Mm-hmm. So it took a little bit to get used to. You know what I mean? You know, my first couple of fights, I was a little bit hesitant to throw kicks because I knew guys just wanted to take me down. But, you know, over the years, training my jiu-jitsu, being comfortable off my back, I feel no different now. I feel just as light on my feet. I feel even better of a kickboxer now and with more improved wrestling jiu-jitsu. So, you know, I'm really not fazed by it anymore.
Did you actually have to make adjustments? I know there's a lot of stance adjustments, or is it just getting confidence on the ground?
You know, at first I made a little bit of adjustments, you know, when I first started fighting MMA. Like my first fight, my stance, I sat a bit lower. You know, mm-hmm. I carried my hands a bit lower, you know, to be ready for the shot. But, you know, now, you know, I got so much experience and so much training behind me. I feel relaxed, man. I feel I can do it all. It doesn't matter, you know?
Well, what's your background in terms of how you got into the sport and, you know, combat sports as a whole? I had overheard in your interview with James, your most recent one, that you had spent some time in juvie. What's your story? How, you know, tell me a bit about your upbringing and how you got into the sport.
You know, I grew up with a single mom. You know, my mom had me when she was, you know, 14, 15 years old. She was out on her own raising a kid. My dad was Jamaican. He got deported, you know, when I was very young. I never really knew him. And, you know, I just grew up a little bit poor. We never had much money. But one thing I always did as a kid was, you know, fight. You know, I used to be in Taekwondo. I used to be in boxing. I used to get in a lot of street fights. And, you know, eventually I wound up in juvie. And I had a probation officer that let me out on probation and house arrest. And she let me write off my Muay Thai kickboxing as anger management instead of breaching me and sending me back to juvie. So I started training. I got it written off as probation and anger management. And it just so happened I had like a natural talent for it. And, you know, once I started fighting, it all kind of just exploded. I think like my first 3 months of training, after my first 3 months, I already had a fight.
So you've been doing this for a long time.
I've been doing this since I was 16, yeah. I've been fighting since I was 16, but I've been training, you know, martial arts, you know, my whole life almost.
And what has it done for you in terms of adding discipline to your life and making you a more well-rounded person?
Definitely. It makes you disciplined. You know, I used to be a hothead. I used to react without thinking, but, you know, just being a martial artist over time, a true martial artist can, you know, control his temper, can control himself. And, you know, it made me make the right decisions. I realized, you know, there's no point getting in trouble, being in the streets, being in and out of jail. You know, I had a real bright future, and I'm glad I stuck with it because, you know, now I'm in the UFC and I got little kids coming up to me saying they look up to me. So it's just really crazy.
How do you plan to attack your UFC career? Are you looking to just take on the biggest names, or do you still find yourself learning and trying to slowly build yourself up?
I feel like one thing about me, no matter how high level I get, I'm always learning. I never want to plateau. You know, I feel like what I got to do is just take these big fights and also as well is make big fights. I think I need to make a statement in my debut. I think I need a big knockout. I think I need to showcase my skill and my style and just really get the people talking. And I think once people see my full potential, you know, it'll be a very quick climb to the top.
Do you see it now? Like, I mean, what do you look at it as promoting yourself? You're seeing guys like Colby Covington, the Conor McGregors really hyping themselves outside of the sport using their words. Do you plan on doing it with skill or a little bit of both?
You know, I feel like I'm a little bit of both, but I feel like I'm mostly going to do it with skill. You know, I've never been a big talker, but I've always been a really big puncher.
So it's just the talking you need to work on then?
Yeah, it's just the talking I need to work on. You know what I mean? Usually, like, you know, like I said, I come from Muay Thai kickboxing. There wasn't really much talking. Most of the times the guys I fought didn't even speak the same language as me. So, you know what I mean? It was just fighting. But, you know, I know it's the entertainment business and people want to see that smack talk. So I'll give them the smack talk, but I'm going to give them the big KOs. And I think that's what people want the most.
So if you want to work on the smack talk, I'll give you a chance right now. Are there any easy targets you see in the featherweight division of the UFC?
Be honest, everybody's an easy target. When I'm 100% trained and ready, everybody's an easy target. You know, I'm a hard match for anybody. So I'll say this right now. Anybody on the roster that's going to be facing me is going to be dealing with big problems and big power and be putting away.
And what can we see? Like, if we're watching you for the first time, what are we looking for? What do you bring?
You know, first of all, don't blink. I bring a lot of speed. I bring a lot of power. I bring a lot of pressure, and I get the job done. I'm a fighter. I don't run. I don't try to stall. Every time you see me fight, I'm fighting the whole time till the job's completed.
Do you have a fight lined up in the near future? Like, is anything signed yet, or are you still waiting on that first opponent?
You know, they told me to be ready for January, February, so I'm guessing, you know, I see a couple of fight cards in there. You know, I just got signed, so I had to make sure I got, you know, get through all the paperwork and all that, make sure everything's straight, and, you know, make sure my visa's all good, and I'll be announcing a fight within the next week.
Oh, wow. That's great. Okay, and are there any different locations that you have your eyes set on in terms of January, February? Any different fight cards to catch your eye?
You know, I'm not really picky choosy. I'm just excited to be in the UFC, and wherever they want to put me, I'm gonna represent and get my name out there.
All right. Well, we wish you all the best. I mean, you're undefeated. You're new to the roster. You've been a free agent for some time. It's confusing as to why the UFC hasn't signed you, but now that's done. That's behind us. Again, one thing that stuck out to me was on social media. I'd mentioned, you know, someone said, oh, I think Hakeem Dawodu can beat, you know, so-and-so. And I said, well, what about, like, Gavin Tucker? That was before Gavin Tucker's last fight. And you jumped in and you were like, yeah, I can beat him. And I was like, okay, well, I'm not going to argue with the guy.
you know what I mean, Gav? you know, Gavin Tucker got in, but, you know, everybody knows who the best Canadian is. It's, you know, I don't care anybody says. Any Canadian wants to say something, mother, come step up to me. I'm the number one Canadian. I'm now here in the UFC, and I'm going to be making waves.
I mean, again, being the number one Canadian right now, it's other than GSP, it's up for grabs. I mean, while GSP was on the shelf for 4 years, there wasn't really a Canadian, you know, aside from maybe Rory McDonald, who's not in the UFC anymore, that really stepped up and took that mantle. Is that something you're looking to do?
I am the number one Canadian. I am going to be that number one Canadian. And when people think of Canadian mixed martial arts, they're going to think of Mina Keene. So I'm telling you, I'm going to make a big wave in the next year. I'm going to be turning heads. And, you know, pretty soon, I'm going to be the face of MMA Canada.
All right. Well, you heard it right here. 2018 is the year of Mina Keene. We look forward to seeing you compete in the UFC and look forward to all your successes.
Thank you very much. I just want to give a big shout-out to, you know, my trainer, Ryan Bird at Champions Creed, all my trainers at Mike Miles, Teal Fist of Boxing, and the Athlete Factory.
There it is, Mina Keene Duwadu. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
That was Keene Duwadu. Very good prospect, obviously, ranked number 2 on Flow Combat's prospect rankings done by James Lynch, another Toronto native, good guy. And now he's a member of the UFC, and you heard what he said there. He's interested in that Ricardo Lamas fight.
Yeah,
he's in Canada. Why not?
That's what I always tell people. You need confidence. If you're going to go to the UFC and you're going to take these big fights, you need this confidence. And he's one of these kids that has that confidence to fight anyone, anywhere, anytime. So that's why he's going to be successful. He's not going to back down to fights, and he's got the confidence to back it up. I'm excited. Again, he's representing, to me, Canadian kickboxing at the same time as representing Canadian MMA. A lot of us kickboxers were in a little group, and we always like to support the others doing it. Like we said, we have other Canadian amazing kickboxers have done it in MMA, but he seems to be the highest prospect of kickboxers in recent times. So let's see what Hakeem's going to do for us.
Yeah, and you know what? There was a young prospect back in the day who had a lot of confidence. They gave him his debut fight. It was against Dustin Poirier. He was, you know, the kid was 4-0 at the time coming into the UFC. That kid's name is Max Holloway, and he's currently the featherweight champion of the world. So sometimes it's good to, you know, the fight's in Canada. You've got a kid that wants to fight in Canada and wants a big challenge, a big test. He's undefeated. If he loses to Ricardo Lamas in the co-main event, you're not setting his career back. You're getting a chance to showcase how a young prospect does against a guy who probably won't fight for the title because Lamas recently lost to Max Holloway.
Yeah,
and he they want to have him fight Aldo, but he's already lost to Aldo. So why not give Duwadu a chance to show what he's got? Whether or not Lamas would accept that fight is, you know, Lamas's business. But I like the idea of taking prospects and throwing them into the fire. Let's see what they can do.
See, I'm a little mixed between that. I agree with it that I think it's great. It doesn't hurt their career. But I feel, especially with Hakeem, he's still newer to the game of mixed martial arts. So to put him in against a veteran might be a little bit different because as confident as he is in his striking and takedown defense, guys who have been in this game a long time, their wrestling, their cage work, it's just at a different level. So for me, I would prefer to see him build himself up properly and not throw him in right away. My career, looking back, I was thrown to the biggest names right away. But looking back, I was like, it would have been nice to have the slower step to the way of the title, to continue to gain experience, to make more money along the way, to, you know, have more opportunities to, you know, sell myself and my brand. So I think for him, a good strategy could be to start him off slowly, get him against other strikers who he can showcase his high level striking. You know, he comes in, gets some good high kick knockouts, he starts making name for himself. So I'm now looking towards, when I was fighting, I didn't care about those big fights. But if you build these guys and if you see a big talent in them, let's build them up slowly. Let's get his name slowly growing. If you feel he's a top prospect, if he's a top prospect that you think is good, he has it, then okay, throw him in. But if you really believe in Hakeem being this next big thing for not only Canadian MMA, but for MMA in general, let's build him slowly. Let's get him these big knockouts slowly, build his confidence, start him with strikers, and then maybe build him into some more solid wrestlers. But he has that confidence. He won't say no to anyone. He'd fight for a world title tomorrow if you asked him.
Yeah, see, the problem with this card in Winnipeg is they don't have any other featherweight fights.
Yeah.
So now that Aldo's off the card, you don't have anybody that's like, oh, I can step in. So that's why I bring up Hakeem, you know, and I didn't mean to put him on the spot, although he seemed pretty,
oh,
pretty
I mean,
excited.
He'll never
about
say no. He'll never say no to that opportunity. You give him a title shot, he'll take it. Yeah. So I mean, I just think he's still new.
But there are fighters
new.
That would say, listen, I'm new to this. I want to take it slowly.
Not future. I'm telling you, champion. The fighters you know who will be champions and have that championship mentality, that's what Hakeem does. He'll fight it. I'm telling you, he will fight it. Those fighters who overthink now, no. If anything, the fighter's going to say yes, it's the management that'll say no. I'll right. never say no. And it'd be more of the management choice. If a fighter's like, well, I want to kind of build myself, it's like, you don't have championship mentality a lot of times. You should be able to want to fight anyone, anytime. Doesn't matter what level, where they are. And then it should be your management being like, no, well, we're going to pull you out of this. But you should still want to go.
Yeah, and it seems Hakeem is one of those guys.
Absolutely. You need that mentality. You need that mentality. I'm telling you, that's the championship mentality. And if he's showing that now, I believe in it.
Yeah, and he's a young guy, 26. So he's got a lot of time to grow in the sport. UFC 219, last week we were talking about how the tickets were about to go on sale and they had no events. They ended up pushing the ticket sale date back 2 weeks. But they did announce Cyborg versus Holm is done. It's set for UFC 219. Cyborg has signed a new deal with the UFC to keep her in the organization for quite some time. I think that's a great fight in terms of a women's MMA fight. It might be
huge.
The greatest ever. I mean, when you think of it. Unless you peel back some of the layers of the onions. Let's not forget, Holm is 1-3 in her last four with a win over Betch Gohea. It's not incredibly impressive. But if you look at in terms of decorated strikers in the sport, Holm is right up there with her from her boxing career. Cyborg's right up there from her incredible Muay Thai and her incredible MMA career. So that's going to be a really fun fight, but it might not be the main event because they've been discussing Tyron Woodley versus Nate Diaz for the welterweight title. Now, this is a fight that I absolutely despise.
Okay, why? I'll let you go first.
Well, Nate Diaz is unranked at welterweight.
Yep.
He's 3-3 as a welterweight, and if you disregard the fights against Conor, he's 2-2. Got thrown around by Rory McDonald. The reason Woodley wants this, I don't think Woodley's ready to fight, but I think Woodley thinks this is such an easy fight that he, it's basically easy money that he's willing to step in, take a big name, even though he might not be fully healed, and take this fight. But what does it say for the welterweight division that has a lot of, it's swimming with sharks right now? This isn't, this isn't George St. Pierre coming back after a 4-year layoff.
I don't know why they keep building Nate Diaz for all these big money fights.
Diaz is, if you look at the pay-per-view sales in UFC history, he's on the event that sold the most ever, him and Conor.
But why is
it? But is it him or is it Conor?
Absolutely. I mean, it just worked well with Conor because he has the mentality. But him alone, he won't sell anything. Half the time he's late for the press conferences. He doesn't show
Nick.
Up.
That's Nick. Nate shows up.
He does? All right.
Nate always shows up.
Okay. Well, I mean, I just think Nate can't sell on his own anyway, so I think he needs that person, but I don't think he should be getting title shots against Woodley.
This is the thing.
I bet you Colby's not happy about that.
Here's why I think this makes a lot of sense for the UFC. If Nate Diaz gets destroyed by Woodley, now suddenly he keeps asking for $20 million a fight and all this stuff. It's like, well, he just got...
Lower his stock, you're saying.
He just got steamrolled by Woodley. If Nate Diaz wins, now you set up a trilogy fight with McGregor with immense stakes because McGregor could become the first 3-division champion in UFC history.
Yeah.
And you just continue to build this guy astronomically. Now, whether or not that's something that Conor needs in his life after his antics recently is another question. But if you market that and you're the UFC, you're talking about more than 2 million buys. The trilogy fight between them with a title on the line at 170.
I get it, but still, I don't think Nate Diaz should be there yet. I think there's other guys that
it
to.
That's the part of the fight. That's the part of this that I really don't like. It's like with George St. Pierre, you can overlook it because it's George St. Pierre's a legend.
Absolutely.
He's one of the greatest of all time. Nate Diaz is nowhere near the greatest. One of the greatest of all time. No disrespect to Nate Diaz. A fantastic fighter, very entertaining fighter, very good fight promoter, but. Then you look at Colby Covington, you look at this upcoming fight with Lawler and RDA. You look at a guy like Kamaru Usman who's having trouble getting ranked, who I think a lot of people could hang with Woodley, even though he's unranked.
I think he'd beat Diaz to me.
Oh, Kamaru Usman would destroy Diaz.
Yeah,
I think he'd take him down and just sit on him for 3 rounds, no problem.
What is Diaz ranked? Do we know?
At welterweight, he's unranked.
He's unranked at welterweight.
At lightweight, he's, I think, number 6.
So you give him a title shot at welterweight.
Yeah.
Sounds right. Makes sense.
He lost his last welterweight fight against Conor.
makes total sense.
And then he's 2-2 as a welterweight. I mean, listen, if you're, I always say the UFC is a business.
Yeah.
So if they need to make a fight like this to sell pay-per-views, they're going to make it, and they should make it. because that's how you run a business. You run a business to make money. You don't, you know, meritocracy is important for sure, but at the same time, if you think that Bisping versus, I don't know, Rockhold is less of a fight than Bisping versus GSP, you can make Bisping versus GSP. And I don't care if they make Woodley versus Diaz. I'll watch it.
Absolutely.
I'm interested. Sure, I want to see how that plays out. I just think that, you know, while that it's kind of unfair to the other welterweight contenders, I don't know how much it really does for Woodley other than pat his pockets a little bit. I don't think a win over Diaz is going to be something that puts him into this legendary sphere that he keeps talking about.
Where do you think Woodley is mentally right now? It seems like everyone's questioning. He's always doing his broadcast stuff. He's taking another hosting job.
I think Woodley's fine mentally. I think Woodley's one of the most confident guys that we've ever seen in the UFC.
He doesn't want to seem to engage in anything with Covington,
yeah,
with the Tyquil.
That I think is silly.
Yeah,
I think he should engage with Covington. I think you should plant the seed and start selling that fight now. Start selling that fight now.
I would think so. I'm surprised that's not the fight now. And I mean, Colby just seems to be going every UFC event now.
Surprises me too. I would book that. I think Colby versus Woodley, if Nate falls through, would be a great fight in December. Although Woodley told BJPenn.com yesterday that if it's not Nate, he's not fighting on that card.
Yes. There's got to be something going on with Woodley. You think it's just... He doesn't think Colby can
Woodley's
sell.
Woodley's recovering from an injury. So, I mean, I think that this is one of the situations where Woodley looks at it and says, oh, I can beat this guy injured or not, even if my shoulder is a little bit hurt, even if I'm not fully
recovered.
Buys
him some time.
I can beat Nate Diaz. It'll buy me a bit of time. I'll make him a nice paycheck. But if he has to fight a guy that's like a legitimate welterweight competitor, it's like, well, I need a little bit more time to recover in that instance, which makes a lot of sense from a business perspective.
Well, Woodley wants – I know Woodley's – hasn't really said anything about anything in the welterweight division. He's only talking super fights now. I think he wants that. He wants GSP.
He wants the payday, yeah.
Yeah, he wants the payday. He's chasing the big fights.
So, yeah, I don't think that GSP fight's going to happen either. I don't know. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Yeah. Well, who knows? Woodley's going to try anyways.
And I'm reading reports that the UFC is trying really hard to make GSP versus Whitaker happen in Australia. They're going to have to try really, really hard because I don't think that's a reality.
No, I don't think so.
Seems
like. Have you heard anything about any other rumors with GSP?
No, nothing really. I had heard that there was discussions about Woodley versus GSP for that event, but I don't know how, if that was just kind of a discussion or something they were throwing at a dartboard.
Yeah,
I don't think that Woodley would take that fight either. I mean, it's just if he's hurt at all, you don't want GSP to be your opponent.
And I'm sure GSP, I mean, he's very intelligent with his camps and his career. I see him taking some time to, you know, maybe have another full camp, rest and have a full camp again. I don't think he's coming back to be fight so many times in a year.
Let's not forget, he was hospitalized after he beat Bisping. It wasn't an easy night for him.
Yeah.
So why come back right away? But you know what? Money talks.
Yeah,
they call
true.
GSP and say, listen, we really want this to be a big card. We'll pay.
Maybe he only
this.
Planned to come back for a year or two and wants to maximize his time.
Yeah.
So we'll be seeing soon.
GSP is in business. He wants money.
Did they come out what injuries he had from that Bisping
fight? No, he said that he came out in his interview and said that he got hit in the head and he hurt his neck really badly. But, you know, that was pretty much what he said. He didn't allude to whether or not he had a concussion or anything along those lines. But he said he suffered a neck injury in the middle of the fight.
Well, I'm sure there was concussions anyways.
Yeah.
Every fight has a concussion.
Yeah, it's fighting. Volkan Ozdemir was arrested on aggravated battery charge. I believe it was late Saturday night. He's released a statement that it was just kind of a bar scuffle. And
bar fight.
Yeah, he thinks it's going to go away. But if I'm the UFC, I pull him. And it's not because of, you know, the crime. It's because I think that now you can say, okay, well, Volkan needs some time to learn a lesson. Gustafsson is ready to go. Because to me, Gustafsson is just a far more marketable name.
You've been saying that for a while now.
Yeah, if you're in the pay-per-view business, make that fight. The first fight was excellent between Cormier and Gustafsson.
Yeah.
You're not going to get a whole lot of trash talk, but you're not going to get a ton of trash talk between Ozdemir and Cormier either, at least not anything other than manufactured trash talk. Gustafsson's a bigger name. I think that fight's a bigger event.
Yeah, I agree.
And that's the fight you should make.
It's just Volkan with his recent, you know, knockout stance and his big heat and attention. We've seen Gustafsson a few times at the top.
Let's say Ozdemir knocks out
Cormier.
Just
a new name.
Hypothetically, let's say Ozdemir knocks out Cormier. Now you've got a guy that doesn't have much of a following, not a lot of marketability. I mean, he'd gain marketability from beating Cormier.
Yeah.
I mean, especially if he knocked him out in the first round like he says he's going to. But, you know, is this the guy that you want to sell pay-per-views on his back? I mean, Cormier is a far bigger name.
Yeah, I mean.
And so is Gustafsson.
I kind of thought that with Stipe Miocic, too, though. I mean, who knows? Maybe Volkan steps up and really, shows he's doing well. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I think the fight they should be setting up right now is Cormier versus Stipe, but we'll see what happens. I know Ariel Helwani, he's alluded to that also. He said basically put Stipe and Cormier on the same card in Boston and then set up a fight between them.
Do you think Cormier, he probably doesn't have much left either.
Cormier, no. Cormier is like 37 or something. I don't think he has a lot of time
a year
left.
Or two.
Yeah,
so
a year or
get
two.
Some big fights
yeah,
in.
Exactly.
Yeah, why not?
Make some money.
I agree with it. I would like that fight.
And for Cormier, if he can walk around a bit heavier and fight at heavyweight against Stipe, that's I think.
Well, remember he was
him.
A heavyweight, right?
Yeah.
With his whole strike force run, he was beating
the only reason
a lot
he was
of
the light
names.
Heavyweight is because Kane was the champion, and him and Kane are buddies and training partners.
That's the biggest sad thing to me, Kane. To see Kane out for so long, it just hurts.
He keeps getting re-injured. You know, and I asked Kane point blank. I said, would you be okay with Cormier moving to heavyweight and going on a title run? He said, no problem.
Yeah.
So, you know, whether or not he says something different behind the scenes is left to anyone's imagination. But, again, with Volkan, I think that he's looked great, and I don't want to take anything away from the guy. But at the same time, you know, he's beaten Jimmy Manoa. He's beaten Misha Sirkunov.
Yeah.
Is that enough to get a title shot when you've got a guy like Gustafsson who's fought the best of the best, that always has fun fights, had a great fight with Cormier that could have gone either way?
No, you're right. I give it to you.
I appreciate that.
I give it to you. That one I give to you. He's just got to stay out of those bar fights. And you're never going to win. You're a UFC fighter. Even if the guy cracks you and you hit him back, you're not going to win.
Yeah.
You're considered a lethal weapon, Volkan, no matter what you do. Even if you push a guy, people are going to come after you. You got to control it, no matter how much booze and stuff you're drinking and partying. Stay away from it, man. It's too dangerous. There's too many drunk idiots out there at bars and clubs who will recognize you
in
and
Florida?
Want you everywhere. Come on.
Yeah. Well, in Florida, you're in particularly a particular place that has a lot of people that do weird things.
Yeah. I don't know. Come on, Volkan. Stay out of it.
Yeah, stay out of trouble.
You're a professional now. You get paid to do it. Don't do it at the stupid bars. But I mean,
don't do it for free.
There's a lot of fans, man, but fans are just ridiculous out there. And I mean, you still got to understand, like, it's hard sometimes when you have fans constantly yelling, saying trash about you, and you're just trying to have a fun time with your friends. They want to fight you because they don't think you're good. They think you're terrible, or they lost money on your bet. It's just, it's
well,
a tough
really
out there.
Hammered.
Yeah,
know,
I mean,
you know,
I don't know.
Some of the, you know, liquid courage.
Who knows
to take
what
it
is?
Way.
Who knows what it is? Maybe Volkan went with his girl. It's always girls at the club, so maybe there was a girl involved in it. Yeah, who knows?
Yeah, it's the kind of stuff you just need to avoid. Like you said, stay home.
Yeah, exactly.
Do what Daniel Cormier does, just hang out with his family.
Yeah, well, it's nice to go out, but I mean, just control yourself.
Yeah, take it easy. Yeah, Elias, I've spoken to about this kind of thing too, and he says whenever those situations arise, he just like wants to be everybody's buddy. That's just like
That's
be
it.
Nice to everybody.
That's
Nobody's going to get in your face if you're being friendly to people. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We talked about Fabricio Werdum a little bit in the previous segment, but this incident with Colby Covington and the boomerang is very strange. I mean, he's been charged with assault.
You think it's going to stand?
Well, he's going to have to go out of pocket, go to Australia.
And to actually go to court to see?
Wow. I mean, if it stands, what does he get? He might get a fine or something. Who knows? I don't think he's going to go to jail. But, you know, Covington is really getting himself in the headlines every week, it seems.
Yeah.
Seems like something's going on. I mean, he did. You know, in his video he posted afterwards that he took down, you know, used a homophobic slur, which is not a good look.
No.
And he continues to say that people from Brazil are filthy animals. And, you know, you got to...
He's still going.
I know you're playing that gimmick, but, like, you know...
What are you taking from it? Do you like how he's doing it, or is he crossing the line
aside,
a little too much now?
I think that when you call people from Brazil filthy animals, because he says it's because they were throwing garbage at me, they were calling
they're
me
harassing
all kinds of names,
him,
they were harassing me. Yeah, you're kind of stepping on the line. But when you start using homophobic slurs, that's when you cross the line, and people stop kind of buying. People kind of take a step back and say, like, you know, let's tone it down a little bit here. Let's take it easy. The UFC has to deal with that. I mean, it seems that wherever Werdum goes, these homophobic slurs seem to follow him. There was the thing with him and Tony Ferguson.
It was Ferguson,
well, here's the issue I have with Werdum is, you know, and I don't know how this whole situation started, but, and I like Werdum. I've interviewed him many times. He's a nice guy. But, you know, he had that thing with Ferguson. He apparently had to do some outreach to the LGBT community.
Yeah.
But then he comes out to, you know, in his fight to the Akhmat MMA music, which is run by Kadyrov in Chechnya, who are running gay concentration camps. It's like, so how much is this guy really learning?
Yeah, probably not much.
I mean, it just reeks of hypocrisy. Mm-hmm. And I think that we, you know, we need to hold these guys accountable sometimes.
I agree. I mean, fighters don't understand a lot of times. They do have a big influence on people. They're role models. They need to start doing things that people, you know, that are looking up to them should follow. I mean, to see Volkan go to jail for bar fights, not a good example. To hear guys using homophobic, you know, terminology, it's not acceptable. Mm-hmm. I mean, we got to be role models out there.
And it seems like it keeps happening in the UFC. Like, I think they need a really strong policy on this.
Yeah,
like,
for sure.
You heard the Conor saying it backstage. And I mean, I don't super fault him for it because he doesn't know that he's mic'd. And I mean, listen, they shouldn't be saying it in general.
Yeah.
But, you know, locker room, you know, what he says with his buddies after a fight is, or his training partners after a fight, you don't know how he gets his guys going. I don't know. I don't want to call it acceptable behavior because it's not. It's not acceptable behavior. And whether a microphone's rolling or not, you shouldn't be using that word. You shouldn't be using that kind of terminology. But, you know, then Verdum and Ferguson say it to each other, and then Colby's saying it. They need a strict policy against this, and they need to, you know, get awareness going. And now Colby Covington's going to go back to his gym today at the ATT, and he's got Amanda Nunes training there, who's Brazilian and gay.
Yeah.
And like, listen,
but
you
maybe
know,
I just think it's said in the heat of the moment. I don't think he really, you know, hates gay people.
Yeah,
I don't think it's a homophobic thing.
Well,
but
saying that doesn't mean that you hate gay people,
absolutely.
But it certainly means you're insensitive to them.
Yeah, I mean,
it certainly means
it's so natural to say when you're mad. I mean, I was like, I've been in situations where if I'm arguing with my friends, I'll say something. How many ex-girlfriends have I yelled at and said things I don't mean? But I mean, I think just things are said and that they don't mean. But I can't see him being, you know, really that homophobic and that harmful to someone. I mean, I bet you if you ask him now, he probably loves gay people. He probably has so many gay friends.
It is harmful, though. It's harmful language. It's hate speech, basically. It's borderline hate speech.
Yeah.
So
I get it.
You know, like, I would never say that word, no matter how angry I was at somebody. I would never say it because I'm using someone else's lifestyle to put someone down, like that they're less than what I am. Because
you got
that
some higher level
somebody.
Thinking. That's why we're on this radio show.
Yeah.
And we have, you know, professional careers.
That's the
and
kind of thing that needs to be ingrained in the fighters. Like, you need to sit them down and have workshops with them, or anytime someone says that, you need to give them sensitivity training. It's important. Like, it's important to your
brand. I 100% agree. I 100% agree with you.
The UFC have done initiatives that help the LGBT community, have released T-shirts and things like that went to charities. Like, they're trying to do work. But this kind of, and they're trying to raise awareness of LGBT issues, and they're trying to show that they're a company, like, they have a champion that's openly gay. Like, these are steps in the right direction. But then when you have your fighters going and saying this, it's for your brand, it's a step in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
So, you know, they release these statements. It's like, oh, our fighter conduct, we're looking into this for the fighter conduct policy, and then you never hear about it again. So, you know, I just think the UFC needs to step in here and launch initiatives and raise awareness about why using this word is wrong. And you have openly gay athletes,
but remember,
in your organization.
A lot of times they run these programs just to make themselves look good. What are they actually doing? I'm sure they have personal fines. The UFC has their own fines for using it, but they're probably a couple thousand, or where guys don't really care. But you got to remember the type of people who go into martial arts. So, for example, myself, I had bad anger issues, and that's one of the reasons I went. So fighting and martial arts still, and MMA has a history of getting guys, criminals. Martial arts used to be all criminals who used to come. Kickboxing and MMA wasn't a family thing 15 years ago.
It was all
criminals. Like, my training partners were in and out of jails. You know, there was a lot of gang affiliated stuff, a lot of people getting into trouble. Like, I was training at people's houses who were on house arrest because they couldn't come to the gym, and we still had to prepare. So, I mean, that was the culture of the sport, and you still have a lot of the people. And I mean, you're looking at a lot of these Brazilians, they can't afford to go to school. They can't afford, you know, even a good living at home.
Like,
so,
Jose,
I mean,
Aldo came
yeah,
from the
I mean,
of Brazil, yeah.
It's different, you know, myself. I had a university degree. I had, you know, a full family at home. I got food. So, I mean, I think it's a little different. We're still getting a lot of different levels of people, but it's still, no matter what level of life you are, it's 2017. Let's get with the times.
Yeah.
I'm not saying, but I'm thinking the type of fighters and the type of people we have, they just need more education, like you said.
I just think from a brand perspective, you're just protecting your brand.
Yeah.
Like, if you're the UFC and you, like, you're doing these good initiatives, it's like, you deserve to be
applauded
for them.
But I mean, it sounds good. Like recently in the NFL, for example, they had the concussion protocol, where the concussion protocol, they have this tent outside of the sideline where you're supposed to zip up and go. And I think it was, who was it, Drew Brees or something, that ran out halfway. They went in, peeked his head, and went out right for the play. There was no concussion protocol. But it sounds good when we're talking about CTE and brain injuries. And then they have this protocol, but they don't even use it. So, I mean, I think it's just a show. And, I mean, I think the UFC's supporting and making Verdum go to these, you know, outreach programs. But it's just to make themselves look good. But I don't think they're actually doing something to solve the problem.
Yeah, and that's fair. But, again, at the same time, how many big companies, big sports organizations have openly gay champions, have openly gay people that are at the top of the sport? Like, you have a unique opportunity here to raise awareness among your athletes and to show, like, listen, this is a sport for everybody.
100% agree.
So I think that they need to seize that opportunity. That's all I'm saying. And I think that the fighters need to learn somehow that this kind of language is, it's just in this day and age, is not acceptable and it's hurtful.
Yeah. There's a lot of things. There's other language as well that we can talk about, but it's just people educating themselves. That's it.
Yeah.
So, no.
Like, you don't hear other fighters use racial slurs for the most part. Like, you don't hear, like, people use the N-word, and you know, and when they're promoting fights or, I mean, it has happened in the past, but that was like 10 years ago.
Yeah, it's getting better, yeah, true.
And it's gotten better because society progresses. So let's just keep progressing. Let's keep explaining to these fighters, like, listen, like, it's fine for you to get fired up and release videos, and you know this is an aggressive sport, and we get that you're in the heat of the moment. But let's, you know, think about our actions a little bit here.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Yeah, and I mean, Fabricio should be held to, you know, I mean, he's being charged with a crime. I mean, he's being held to a standard.
You're a role model now.
Yeah,
you're a role model now.
Role model, you're a public
figure.
Let's
do it. Yeah, you're representing the company more as much as you're representing yourself. So
I mean, Kobe
yeah.
Bryant got suspended for saying it on the bench in an NBA game. It wasn't Mike. Nothing. He just his mouth moved.
Yeah,
he
money
called,
talks.
He called the referee then.
Find these guys. Yeah. Money
find
talks.
Them.
Find them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I remember with my contracts with Glory and other organizations, we get a list of rules, and it shows us the penalties. If we swear in the corner, this is what we get. This if we use this type of language, this type of religious thing, this type. Even if the point, if you went into the corner and you're wearing something wrong or offensive, you're going to get charged and fined.
Yeah.
So, I mean, maybe money talks, start taking fines, like even UFC fines.
Yeah, the UFC has a code of conduct. Like, they fired Miguel Torres because he breached the code of conduct.
Yeah.
You know, he tweeted something out. They didn't like it.
That was with the rape choke or something
rape
like
van.
That.
Rape van. He
yeah,
said,
something ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like that.
But again, you're picking and choosing how you want to,
and what's acceptable and what's not to
and
say.
And who is it? It's acceptable for people, you know, who can do it and who can't.
Yeah.
Because they're, I mean, Colby Covington's ranked high.
Yeah. Well, they have those UFC summits. Maybe make it a, you know, one of those mandatory courses that guys need to do and talk about the fines and the penalties. And
I mean, listen, I like a lot of these athletes. I think they're all nice people, and I think deep
for
down.
Sure.
But at the same time, you know, it's just about improving as human beings, and that's fine, and that's all it is.
I think it's a lot of anger management.
Beings.
For sure, I think it's a lot of anger management, and it's the culture of the sport. You're in a manly, tough sport where everyone has to be so tough and manly, and then the first insult you can call someone in the sport is gay or a girl.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, it's still stupid. We can see
it's juvenile.
Most of these girls will whoop all these guys' ass these days. Yeah. So, I mean, things need to change.
Yeah, absolutely needs to change. Absolutely needs to change. Let's move on to UFC Fight Night in Shanghai, China. The first UFC fight in mainland China. A lot of newcomers on the card, so for us to really break it down is going to be difficult. So let's just talk about what we're excited about on this particular card. Obviously, the main event, Bisping versus Gastelum. I'm hearing a lot of people talk about what you were talking about last week with, you know, Bisping fighting on this short notice.
Yeah, a lot of people. And a lot of people are understanding. I listened to Brandon Schaub, and he said the exact same thing I said. He said, yeah, you passed all the medical tests because CT and MRIs don't check brain damage. They show that there's no bleeding in the brain. There's no signs of damage anywhere. You're not going to see that with brain damage. You're not seeing that. So that test does nothing for you. So, I mean, I don't know what they're looking for. You've come out and said your eye's almost detached and you can't see. You're one shot away from going blind in one eye. And I mean, it just sets a bad example, man. Talking about examples, and it's just a bad example for fighters in general. You need to take time off between fights, and that's the biggest problem.
Yeah.
The biggest problem people are making in sports is they're not taking the time off that they need between fights. That's rest. That's recovery. It's your body, you know, responding better. It's your head recovering. You need those time between your fights like that, especially after big fights
and,
like
and
GSP.
You almost can't really blame the UFC because it's on the commission. Like, if you can find a loophole to get in there, it's not like the UFC is a business.
A lot
people
of it's because it's China. There's no sanctioning in China. That's why it's in China. I don't think anywhere else would have probably allowed
it. The UFC is basically running. They're running the sanctioning body in China.
Absolutely.
But at the same time, it's like if a fighter can find a way to do something, you know this from being a fighter.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you're like, okay, I got to get out there. I got to do this. You know, you're single-minded.
Yeah,
and it's hard for people to kind of reel you in. But that's really on the commission. Like if Bisping was unable to compete, then the commission should have suspended him for 3 months or something. Something that's not something where he can find a loophole that he can get the fight. Because fighters are never going to, unless someone says, sorry, you can't because of this, they're going to want to fight. That's just how, it's in their DNA, especially Michael Bisping. I mean, we were talking about Bisping before the show about how he's one of these guys where it's like an anytime, any place type
deal. I just think now it's a paycheck. Two fights left. Yeah. He does this. He finishes his career off. It's another payday. It's probably another, you know, $500,000 for him to set up his family. I get it. But if something happens, what's $500,000 now?
Yeah.
You don't get your retirement fight. You know, you're blind in one eye. I mean, hey, yeah, great. Knows? You have 5,000.
I mean, these are worst case scenarios, but
yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, but you know what? Them. It's not even that much. Like, I mean, my career got, I didn't mean to stop as early as I did. It's just something that happens. You take one wrong knee or a concussion and there it goes. I mean, you're at the point where you're, you know, one little shot can be the end of, you know, your career and a healthy post, you know, UFC career as well. So I don't know. We'll see. It's not my brain. I'm here. We'll see. Whatever he wants to do. I'm good.
Yeah. You're not going to Shanghai. Although you were in mainland China a couple
of
months ago.
I was in Guangzhou.
Yeah, cool.
Well, we'll probably be there three times next year we want to go to China.
How's that? How's Glory in Toronto coming along? Is it almost there?
Still waiting. We're still waiting. It's supposed to be this November, now January. Now it's moved to sometime next year, so we don't know yet.
Commissioners,
so hurry up, commissioners.
Yeah. All right. So Bisping Gastelum, I mean, the thing about this fight is Gastelum's like a natural 170-pounder, and Bisping's fought at light heavyweight. He's a pretty big middleweight. I think he's going to be much bigger than Gastelum in this fight.
Yeah, you would think so, but I didn't think Bisping that looked much bigger than GSP in his last fight either. I thought GSP kind of looked
around the same height.
Yeah, it kind of looked the same. I don't know. Bisping didn't look that much bigger to me. I think in the pre-fight stuff he looks a lot bigger, but in the ring he didn't look that big to me.
The one thing we do need to remember though is George has that absurd reach. Like yeah, that makes him look longer,
and his big legs too.
Big
those stocky
Gastelum
legs.
Gastelum doesn't really have either of those assets.
Yeah, he's got
but he's just a thick guy,
big solid southpaw, heavy hitter. I mean, yeah, I'm surprised based on the odds that Gastelum's such a high favorite. To be honest with you,
yeah,
Gastelum is a -320 favorite.
We'll discuss our picks afterwards. Yeah. So, I think that's for sure. You know, definitely an interesting point. This card has a lot of little things to look for. So if you're looking at this card and you're a Fight Pass subscriber and you're like, well, why should I watch this? Well, first of all, if you're subscribed to Fight Pass, you're probably going to watch it because you subscribe to Fight Pass and you love fighting. But
and you want to get your money's worth. Here,
yeah,
let me get this money's worth.
A couple things to look for. I think Zabit Magomedsharipov is one of the best prospects in the UFC.
His striking looked wicked.
Yeah,
and that's what I'm pumped.
And he's fighting a great prospect in Shaman Moraes.
Yeah.
Like Shaman Moraes was considered one of the top unsigned prospects for a while. He went to World Series of Fighting, ended up losing to Marlon Moraes, which is really training partner of Zabit. But, you know, I don't want to write Shaman Moraes off in this fight. I think that Zabit is a huge prospect, but you got to look at Shaman as well. So if you're going to watch a fight, that's one you should certainly watch.
Shaman's a Black Zillion? Not Black Zillions.
I'm not sure where Shaman trains.
I thought the Noguera.
Blackhouse,
I think.
He might be. I don't know. I don't know offhand where he trains. But Muslim Salikov, he's a superstar in China. He's the most decorated kung fu fighter in the world. You know, he does wushu and all of that. And he's fought, you know, many, many times. And this is his UFC debut. Also considered a big time prospect fighting Alex Garcia. No, you know, definitely a tough test.
Yeah,
Garcia's, you know, he's a tri-star
thick
guy.
Thick and stocky.
Yeah, that's going to be a fun one. So I would recommend you watch that. Wang Guan, 19-1. You know, I originally looked at him and thought, you know, this is a guy who's only fought. He's 19-1 because he's only fought in China, but he's fought a lot outside of China. So he's a guy that we should keep an eye on. Another prospect. That said, I think Caceres is his toughest opponent to date.
Yeah, Bruce Leroy's tough.
Yeah, he's tough. He's creative. He's crafty. That should be a fun one. Li Jianglang is has been on a good run. He's definitely the best Chinese fighter in the UFC and worth watching. So, you know, it's hard. When you look at Li Jianglang versus Zach Otto, you think that's not a very good co-main event. But then you think back to this past weekend when it was Jessica Rose versus Beck Rawlings.
Beck Rawlings, yeah.
That's probably was the worst televised co-main event of the year for the UFC.
Yeah, easily.
In terms of, someone goes, would that even co-headline Invicta? I go, their combined Invicta record was 1-4, so probably
so
not.
So probably not, yeah.
Yeah,
I was surprised with that.
It's two Australian fighters, I get it. It's in Australia. But that was not a very good co-main event. You can do a lot better than that.
I agree.
Kaylin Curran's on the card. I think she's lost, I think, 5 in a row or something along those lines in the UFC, barely hanging on. But
She's Curran from the Curran family?
No, she's not related.
Not related at all?
Jeff Curran, okay. Yeah, or
Pat Curran.
Pat Curran, yeah, not related. She's actually from Hawaii.
Okay.
So she's a fun fighter, but she's lost so many. Like, I was surprised she got another shot. So I think they're really trying to get her a win. She's an attractive girl. Still young in her career. And then you've got Chase Sherman on the card against Shamil Abdurakhimov. And Chase Sherman's always fun to watch. Always puts on fun heavyweight fights. I'm surprised how early he is in the other card. He's fighting, you know, before two guys that are making their promotional debut. So
It seems like they put on a few Russian fighters on this card.
Yeah, because I think the travel is not, you know.
Yeah, it's pretty close.
Yeah, so that's going to be an interesting, you know, there's some fight. I like watching cards like this because I like seeing guys that I've never seen before and kind of assessing them to see what's next. But, I mean, again, this card, I think, starts at 4 a.m. So,
yeah,
so you're going to have to wake up. Set an early alarm to watch this one. I'm going to come into the office and watch most of it.
At 4 a.m.?
Yeah.
You're going to do it?
I'm going to wake up at 5:30, go grab a breakfast at McDonald's, head over that's here, it. Watch it, and enjoy
quick
some,
bacon
enjoy some
and
early
egg
mining
McMuffin
fights.
And
yeah, exactly. That'll be fun.
I've actually, side topic, I've been, for some reason, I've had this little craving for McDonald's breakfast, and I've been getting it at least once a week. It's one of my bad things I've been doing, but it's been so good since this all-day breakfast thing has been killing me.
Yeah, I know. It's all-day breakfast.
And
tough,
the worst
man.
Thing is Uber Eats delivers it to your house.
They deliver McDonald's to you? Ooh,
yeah, so geez. Some mornings when I don't want to eat breakfast, and McDonald's has been
now
coming.
Now you're talking about wasting money and eating bad food.
Yes, but that $5 delivery charge is worth it.
So what is it? It ends up being like $12 or something?
Yeah, for like a meal. But it's when you don't want to leave your house and you're craving McDonald's, it's well worth
it. Hey, well, if you're going to go to like a breakfast restaurant, you're going to spend at least that with tip.
Yeah, so get McDonald's.
You always find ways to justify things in your head.
Oh, yeah. Well, it was good, Aaron. Stop talking.
You eat that McGriddle?
You worry about your own bank account,
have you
okay?
You got the McGriddle yet?
No. Is it good?
Dude. You don't want to go down that road.
All right.
It's just too good.
I'm just bacon and egg McMuffins. Oh, that's all I'm getting.
Get a bacon and egg McGriddle.
All right.
You'll love it, but you'll hate it at the same time.
Okay. I'll go train right after one of those.
I'll cry while eating it. Why am I doing this?
I'll go train
so
right
good.
After.
Yeah.
I'll train like 6 times that
day.
Yeah,
you can work it off, yeah.
Yeah. I'll do a 6-hour training session after it.
So we did our picks last week. I was successful once again, 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah, you're on it, man. I suck.
Good for me. I'm still down.
I think you influenced me. You keep influencing me with this parlay stuff now. You're like, oh, you did a parlay once. Now I'm all into parlays.
Now you're off of it.
So, no, I'm going to go. I'm going single pick. I'm going single pick this week.
All right.
Ready for it?
Yeah, let's go.
Well, I'm going to go with, I talked so much trash about him. I said it was the stupidest fight he could have ever taken. I've bashed him for 2 weeks in a row, but I'm going to pick him to win. Michael Bisping.
Value is value.
Yeah, I mean, he's a plus 260, so I need to make some money back here to edge you, so I got to go with Michael Bisping.
That's the worst way of thinking when you're making picks. I need to bounce back.
Yeah, I need to get
I need that long odds.
Next thing you know, next week I have no money left, and you're playing by yourself.
Yeah, I'm going to go with a parlay, Alex Caceres and Muslim Salikov. It's ends up at plus 147 as a parlay. Again, Salikov, I've just heard so much hype about this guy. I am interested to see how he does, but I'm gonna go with it. I'm gonna buy the hype, and then you look at Alex Caceres against Wang Guan. I think that Caceres is his toughest opponent to date. A creative guy. I've always enjoyed watching him fight, and I think that the odds are lower than they should be. So I'm gonna go with those two as a parlay. We don't have full odds released just yet.
There's only four. I would like to know the Zabit Mega Shaperov fight.
Let me check and see.
I would like to know what he is.
Because
I really liked him, man. On his last fight, I really liked how he was fighting. Good distance control, really good spin kicks.
He'll probably be at least 3-1 if I had to guess. Yeah, let's see if anything new has been released. I don't think it has just yet, but let's take a look.
Yeah.
I checked it right before we went on.
What team is he with?
Yeah, no odds. Who?
Zabit,
he's with Mark Henry.
Mark Henry, okay.
So he trains, he actually trains with Marlon Moraes, who beat Shaman Moraes in the World Series of Fighting. So am I right about that? Because that would have been a bantamweight fight. I'm going to look that up. I keep saying it, but I just remember there was a Moraes versus Moraes fight in the World Series of Fighting. What was Shaman Moraes' last fight? He lost to Marlon. And since then, he's gone 2-0. He beat Robbie Peralta, World Series of Fighting, former UFC veteran.
So this is
he beat Baboon, Luis Palomino.
This is his UFC debut? No.
This is his UFC debut.
Was he on an Ultimate Fighter show, though?
No.
Really?
No, Shaman was not. Shaman's just always been considered a top prospect.
I thought he was. We've been following each other for a while on Instagram. I'm surprised.
Young guy, 27.
I thought he fought.
Just turned 27. He's got a lot of fight left in him, so we'll see what happens. I think that actually is the fight that I'm, other than Bisping and Gastelum, I'm looking forward to most. And I think a lot of people that follow the sport would say that.
It's
going to be a fun fight.
I agree.
All right, Joe. Well, next week we'll preview UFC 218 in Detroit, Michigan. It's going to be a lot of fun. You should go down to that.
Yeah, I'm just
a 4-hour drive.
Yeah, I'm busy. I have I'm back to back shows
you're in
coming
Glory
up
next week. Aren't you?
No, December 1st, I leave Tuesday for Glory. But,
okay, so that's the same week as 218.
Yeah, I have two back to back shows. We're going December 1st in New York. I have one of my main fighters, Robert Thomas, in a 4-man tournament, so representing Team Bazooka, which we're excited. So we have a bunch of my team coming down. So December 1st, and then we have our big end of the year pay per view, December 9th, Rico Verhoeven versus Jamal Sadiq.
Yeah,
December 9th in Rotterdam.
Lots
so
of
I'm
heat
back
on that
to
fight.
Back. Tons of heat. Press conference. There was Sadiq spat at Rico, so there's a lot of
you don't
tension.
Do that.
No, that's disgusting to me.
Yeah.
I don't.
You said you listened to Brendan Schaub's fight or show. He was talking about that in his last show. When you spit out someone now,
really?
Actually, maybe it was
that.
Joe Rogan. I can't remember if it was his show or Rogan's.
I can't handle that.
Yeah, I think it was Rogan.
If you spit at someone,
you know that something bad's gonna happen.
Yeah,
next.
You can't spit on someone. It's disgusting. So I mean, there's a lot of tension. And, you know, Sadiq knocked out Rico like 6 years ago.
What would make you angrier, if somebody threw a boomerang at you or if someone spit at you?
I'd take the boomerang all day over the spit.
Yeah.
no way. I mean, same thing with that. We always used to laugh about. It's like we always laugh sometimes. Would you rather take the slap or the closed hand? I was like, I think I'd rather take the closed hand than the slap. That sting in the slap, no thank you.
Yeah, and so there's also a level of intimidation to slapping someone.
Because we were talking about when you had no gloves. And I mean, I know Joe Rogan's a big believer in fighting with no gloves. He feels like if you can elbow someone with no protection, you should be able to punch them with no hands. And it might slow people from breaking their hands because they're being more strategic. But man, with open hand strikes, they hurt. Like, you got to look at the old Boss Rudin days when he was like palm striking
palm
and hitting.
I think
I'd rather a closed hand or an elbow than some of those palms to the ear. Man, no thank you.
Yeah.
So,
hard pass on that.
There you go.
So you'd rather get hit with a boomerang.
Yes, than spat
than
at.
Get spat at.
Absolutely.
And you'd rather get open hand slapped than punched.
No, I'd rather be punched than open
hand
slapped.
Oh, sorry, vice versa. Yeah. We should just do a whole would you rather show.
Would you rather?
When there's no card coming
I bet
up.
You if you ask a lot of fighters, they've had this conversation.
Just have like a round table.
Yeah.
Bring in some of your, bring in Bruckman.
We'll bring in
Carvalho.
Antonio. Bring in all my local friends and we'll.
We'll do like a 30-minute would you rather
I bet
combat
you'd be cool,
sports
though.
Edition.
You'd be really cool. There's a lot of these questions that I'm sure a lot of people want to know.
Yeah, like where does liver kick rank in things that you would rather like?
Ooh, yeah,
like that's probably pretty high up there, right? On like head kick or liver kick.
I would take a liver over head kick.
Yeah, like over a flush head kick, yeah.
Or like a hard low kick versus a body kick. Yeah, I think most people would take the low kick over the body kick. Maybe not my low kick. I'd recommend anyone else's. I'd recommend them.
Yeah, they'd rather take my. My body kick.
Yeah, yeah. There you go. All Aaron's right. body kick or my low kick.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll wrap it up on that note. If you think otherwise, just send me a tweet and Joe will be happy to leg kick you.
That's
thanks,
it.
Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back next week with the UFC 218 preview.
Thanks for listening to the TSN MMA show. For all the latest UFC news, visit tsn.ca/UFC.